Good morning and welcome to the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. This morning we present the first of two interviews with candidates for the United States Senate, and we're delighted to have as our guest Congressman Harold Ford Jr., who represents Tennessee in the 9th District from Memphis. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, and thank you, and thank the Broadcast Group Journal for having me on. I appreciate you all doing this. I know the voters do as well.
Well, we're happy to have you. Of course, you are in a well-known Senate race, a campaign for the United States Senate to replace Bill Frist. Your opponent, Bob Corker, has also been invited to appear on our program. We should note that. Let's start with you, Congressman. Some of your campaign signs just have the word junior on them.
You know, I share my dad's name. Yeah. And when I ran for Congress the first time, that became kind of the emblem of the campaign. And it really grew out of one of my opponents in a very patronizing and derogatory, disparaging way, referring to me as junior. Mm-hmm. Because I'd never been called that by my mom, my dad, or my dad comes from a huge family, and I have 91 first cousins, and we, about 30 or 40 of us every Sunday after church, were always together. And they had a different nickname for me, but not junior. But my opponent in the race started calling me that.
Mm-hmm.
And dad figured, you know, most people don't view that in the disparaging way that we do.
Exactly.
Let's
Your dad was reelected how many times to that same seat?
10 times, yeah.
So that's not exactly a negative to be associated with a successful congressman.
So we figure what my opponent may mean for ugly, God might mean for good. So we took it and made it kind of part of the campaign. It became one of the more popular, with buttons made up, T-shirts, nail files, signs, bumper stickers, everything just saying junior. So we had some of that in this campaign as well early on, some of the paraphernalia that we use in Memphis. Then it caught on in the Senate race. People wanted it outside of Memphis, so we kept with it. And
so,
it's a fun little slogan.
You were how old, what, 26?
I was 25 when I announced, 26 when I got elected.
Mm-hmm. Now, and that's pretty young for Congress.
I was blessed.
I mean, most of these people I'm thinking are like more like 66 than 26.
You know, I think it's a good thing. You're right. I think a lot of particularly a lot of young people think of politicians, particularly congressmen and senators, as being very old and kind of dated in a lot of ways. And it's been an advantage in this race because I think all of the big problems, and as complicated as they may be and as enormous in their stature as they may be, require some new thinking. And I think a lot of times age doesn't necessarily mean you're going to think differently. But it certainly suggests that you may bring some fresh perspectives. You may not be burdened with some of the things that these older guys are burdened with. And it's been an advantage in this race. I'm 36. I believe that energy freedom and finding new energy sources, including renewables and alternatives, represent the future for the country. It will free us of not only our oil appetite and help to lower the need to reduce the need to import oil, but it'll make us a safer country and make us a cleaner country as well.
I've always felt that if we could figure a way to stop eating corn and using it to drive, we'd solve two problems at once. The obesity and the
soybeans, corn, nuclear, coal, hybrid engine technology, diesel engine technology. There's so many promising things. And I think some of the older guys, no disrespect to them, but I think they bring a mindset that is frozen in a lot of ways on these issues. They can't fathom how you could take soybeans and turn it into enough, create enough,
so you're saying it's
fuel,
this
source.
Idea that this is the way it's always been, so therefore we're going to continue doing it that way?
Exactly. I mean, thank God Michael Dell and Bill Gates didn't think that way. I mean, they branched out, or even the Jobs fella, figuring that we could make these iPods smaller and smaller, and they've just dared and dared and dared, and technology has grown and grown and grown, and the country is a better place for it. And I think we've got to apply that same kind of thinking when it comes to developing new sources of energy. America consumes a quarter of the world's energy. We make up 4%, a little under 4% of the world's population. We consume 20.5 million barrels of oil a day. That's 42 gallons in a barrel, so about 840, a little more than that, million gallons of gasoline. And the people who have all the oil, we import 2/3 of it. They don't like us. I mean, there's not a country that we import oil from, really, that supports our way of life. You can't win a war on terrorism when you're funding both sides. So we've got to find some new ways.
A year ago, we were paying $3 a gallon for gas. The cynic in me says that the prices are now dropping closer to $2 a gallon because there's an election around the corner.
You think so? What would make you say something
well,
like that?
Well, I say, am I being cynical, or is there really a connection?
Whatever the reason, I think I also find it very puzzling that that right before the election, the prices come down. Here's what we need. We need to never be dependent again upon speculators in the market.
Well, what about some of the people who think we should be drilling in the Alaska National Wildlife Reserve? I know you've spoken out about that.
I don't have any problem with that as long as we are doing other things, as long as we're making advances and making investments in conservation and green energy. The reality is we cannot dig or drill our way out of the problem we have. America is not the only force driving up costs. China, India, Indonesia, Malaysia, Japan, their growth. Just China and India's growth alone will drive up the cost of oil and drive up the demand for oil in significant ways in the coming years. I mean, China, they're adding 100 million new cars, not trade-ins, and 100 million new cars every 15 years. There are 1.4 billion people there.
Yeah.
And the whole country's not fully mature yet. And as more people come online, more energy will be needed. Not to mention the needs of other people around the globe. I mean, you look at even this, as we're learning now about North Korea's nuclear development, you realize that an overwhelming majority of that country only enjoys electricity about an hour or two a day. Actually, about 3 hours a day, and they have one lamp in wherever they may live. So as that country matures and it grows, because the only way we're going to solve, one of the ways we're going to solve this North Korean crisis is to empower the people there to have a better way of life. And it's a dangerous thing that's happening there. I mean, we have to be clear. I'll let you ask a question.
Your answers here are making me wonder that also realize the reason maybe why you're stepping up from representing a small part of Tennessee to wanting to be on a more national stage. These issues you're talking about are not local issues. They're national issues that you're addressing.
Everybody talks about we live in a global community. We really do. I mean, all this technology allows us to reach and communicate with people around the globe in seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Terrorist organizations are recruiting new members using the same technology that we use to communicate within big companies and large companies, or big and medium sized and small companies in our country. And they're using it the way we use to market. They're using it to market as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to realize that things that we do here affect the world, and things that happen around the world affect us. And we need some new approaches and some new ways of doing things. And that's why I think we got off on this subject, really talking about the youth and bringing an optimism and a vigor that I think is lacking in politics, and frankly, an honesty that is lacking in politics today.
Well, if the liberal platform is change is needed, and the conservative platform is, you know, let's keep things the same, do you see yourself as liberal, conservative, or more moderate?
I just want to get things done. I mean, I think people want to change, but they want it to be better.
Because people have written, as you described you in writing in various articles that I've been looking up, as a moderate.
Right.
Which, to me, could be a compliment. I like to think of myself as being moderate.
I put it this way. Wherever the answers are, whoever has the best set of answers. If I come up with an answer, I want people to join me.
Mm-hmm.
If you come up with an answer, if you're sitting in the middle, I'm going to join you. If you come up with an answer and you're on the left, I'm going to join you. If you're on the right and you got a good answer, I'm going to join you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's missing structurally in politics today, because everybody, Republicans, oh, no, if the Democrat came up with it, I can't be with it.
So has it become too...
Oh, if the Republican has it, I can't come up with it.
Too divided in our Congress?
There's nothing wrong with a little partisanship, a little debate.
Yeah.
What is wrong is when the partisanship causes the whole thing to break down. Better where it might be a little competition of ideas, mm-hmm. and then a willingness, once it's all said and done, to come together and do what's in the best interest of the country. Democrats, Republicans, both have good ideas at times. I'm a Democrat because I believe that the people that clean up this studio and clean up this great building here, when we all leave, when their kids get sick, they ought to be able to go to the hospital just like anybody else. It's just like the guy that runs the place. Seems like a heck of a nice guy.
Yeah.
When they drop their kids off at school, the people clean this place up. And I just met a guy who washes dishes at Cracker Barrel. When he drops his kids off at school, he should know they're going to get a decent education. He shouldn't have to be rich to ensure this kid's going to get a good education. At least an education is going to allow them to get into college and get a good job and support their families. We're moving away from that. And that's why I'm a Democrat. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to answers, I look for whomever has the best answers. And I think one of the reasons that my opponent and others have had a hard time pigeonholing me is because they're playing in the old political sandbox that you got to be able to label.
You're either
somebody.
Red state or blue state. Yeah, you can't be in between.
Right. Well, you can't be answer or you can't be. Let's find answers to stuff. And I think people, Tennesseans, are frustrated with that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the reason we're doing pretty well in this race up at this point, we got a long way to go. We're running like we're 10 behind, but some of the polls show us as much as 5 or 6 ahead. I think we're doing okay because people are saying, you know, they're listening to me.
Yeah.
He's listening to talk. I hate talking about myself in third person. They say that I'm listening to them and that he's answering questions. And the more that I'm able to do that, I think the better our chances are of winning this race. And most important, the better our chances are when we get to the Senate to solve some problems. And I hope that people that went across the country in November, that their main interest is not coming up there to yell and scream and bicker and be divisive, but coming up there to yell and scream about getting things done and being willing to roll up their sleeves like yours are. And so let's solve some problems.
I had the good fortune to live in the Washington, D.C. area for a number of years, as you did growing up, too, right?
Yes, sir. My dad was in Congress, so we lived there. I moved there, went to school for junior high school and high school.
And I was taken by the parallel that you got a chance to go to the same high school as Al Gore did, another senator from Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
And you spoke on his behalf at the Democratic National Convention in 2000.
Yes, sir.
What was that like?
It's a big honor. I mean, he provided, there are not many speeches that are bigger than that, and he gave me that chance, and he's like a father figure, an uncle in my life, and, you know, he, every big moment, he's been there for me, and I love him and thank him for it, and I love his family. He's one of the great public servants who have ever served this country, one of the brightest. People can say whatever they want to say about him, but he's been right on more issues far more right and ever been wrong.
Now, some of the things that he's most outspoken about right now would be the environment. How do you correlate that with your views on energy?
Well, I think they go hand in hand. I mean, energy independence and freedom has become a national security issue.
Because you said it would be okay to drill in Alaska, but on the other hand, you know.
Well, I think the technology has improved dramatically.
Okay.
I think that we can do it in a way that will preserve the sanctity and preserve the beauty and the purity of that area. Now that's what they say with the technology. If they're not able to prove that, we wouldn't support it.
Okay.
But I don't believe that drilling in Alaska is going to solve our energy problem. It can be part of the solution, but it's not going to be the solution because there's not enough oil to satisfy the demands of this world. We sit on 300 years of coal reserves out in Montana.
Yeah.
That's right here. If we could learn to burn that clean, or burn coal, burn
right, that's been
coal,
the big problem with it.
And transport it, it'd be a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be absolutely wonderful thing. What they want to do in Anwar, I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen there, it's a pretty pristine area.
I got to go to Alaska one time and, you know, go to near Mount McKinley and stuff, and just it blew me away with how amazing it was.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's different when, you know, you get an appreciation for it that way.
Yeah.
And, good. I don't have any problem with being a part of what we're doing, but if we started drilling there tonight, we got two big problems. Let's say we found all the oil we wanted to find tonight. They said we could find 1 million, 2 million barrels a day.
Mm-hmm.
Say we found 2 million barrels a day. We got one problem in this country. We don't have enough refining capacity to refine the oil. Now, they say it will take 10 to 15 years to find it.
Yeah.
That's conservative estimates. But let's be nice. Say they started at, you know, noon today and or noon tomorrow and they got it at 1 o'clock. We still wouldn't be able to refine it because we don't have the capacity to do it. So we've got an infrastructure challenge in the country, more oil refineries, soybean or biodiesel. My truck runs on biodiesel, biodiesel refineries, ethanol refineries. The problem with ethanol alone is that you touched on it with the corn. I mean, we could find ways to reduce the price of gasoline with a mixture of ethanol and gas. Problem is we drive the cost of everything else because corn is such an important substitute for so many things. So there are advances being made right now at Oak Ridge National Laboratory to use cellulosic ethanol and to find ways to take switchgrass and shrubs and trees, the biomass from that, and convert it into energy. That's the future. And there are a lot of guys in Washington right now and women who are from a different generation. My opponent, he's a nice guy, but he comes from a generation that's kind of stuck, a generation of thinking that's stuck in the past. It's not his age. It's just that he's frozen with that thinking. And you know, the chairman of his campaign runs an oil company here called Pilot. They're nice people, but I got to tell you something. They benefit when we keep this oil infrastructure we have. If you believe we can do this better, if you believe that no future generation of kids, if your son is 12 or 13 or 14, your grandson is 12, 13 or 14, if you want to avoid them being drafted because of our energy appetite, we've got to start now. We should have started 5 years ago.
Right.
And it's amazing to me. I've tried.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans have been in charge in the House and the Senate, not Tennessee Republicans, but the Washington ones. In 5 years, almost a month after we were attacked, you realize we spend more for the gas. I spend more for the gas that's causing us this problem. We pay more for a barrel of oil than we did September the 10, 2001.
Right.
You got to wonder. Over in the Middle East, the terrorists, they don't fund themselves by growing wheat and corn and soybeans or developing software. They sell oil. So you have to ask yourself the question, who's getting the last laugh here? They're funding their war. They're funding their effort against us by us buying gas. And then we're paying for our military by paying taxes. I've never known a civilization in the world to win a war by paying for both sides of it at the same time. we shouldn't start now testing that theory.
We're talking with Congressman Harold Ford Jr. He is running for the United States Senate seat being vacated by Bill Frist against Bob Corker. We're happy to have you with us this morning, Congressman.
Yes, sir.
You mentioned the Oak Ridge National Lab a moment ago, and you know, my ears perked up, as did many people in our listening audience. As a Memphis Democrat, or a Memphis congressman, I guess is what I should say, what do you think of the issues facing the other end of the state, our end of the state? I mean, because we're in East Tennessee, we look at ourselves from, you know, the Smokies to the Cumberland Gap. We're kind of a little insulated, maybe.
I think the issues are the same. I mean, I've not found anybody in the state saying, I can't wait to get home and turn on the news and learn of more casualties in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I've not found anyone say, gosh, I can't wait to get home and get the letter in the mail that my health care premiums have gone up. I've not found a cop anywhere in this in the state saying, gosh, I can't wait to get home to learn that Congress has cut another cops grant.
Yeah.
Or firemen or firefighters saying, gosh, I just hope they cut our fire grants. I hadn't found a farmer who says, ah, I just wish they'd cut more of our subsidies and make it harder for us to compete around the globe. Everybody wants the same thing. Business people, families, pastors, just working people. We just left Cracker Barrel. I was out in the parking lot just shaking hands and asking people for their support. And the number of working people that went through there, that are, some retired, some aren't, saying, look, stand up for us. You know, the world is changing and we need someone's going to stand up for us there. Everybody wants the same thing. I hear that in West Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Now, they're, you know, they're different. Y'all, it's a mountainous area here. It's a little hilly in the middle part of the state and a lot flatter where I'm from.
Yeah.
We got better ribs than y'all got up here, but don't tell anybody. But, I mean, the state is, everybody wants the same thing, and y'all got the football team up here.
Mm-hmm.
So people are the same all across the state. They're, you know, peculiarities. As the Smokies mean so much to the character and the integrity of East Tennessee.
Absolutely.
And the fact that we've allowed the park to be so smoggy and so dirty, we got to do better by that. And the environment is an issue that is of more significance here just for that reason. So there are issues.
Oh, it becomes a health issue for people here when you have to deal with the smog. And you know, we have to make announcements occasionally for people with, you know, sort of sensitive to that, to stay indoors on certain days because the air quality is poor.
So for those reasons, health and economic, I mean, it's a different issue. But people in West Tennessee like breathing clean air, too. And people in Middle Tennessee like breathing clean air. It's just a more urgent reality for you guys because of that. But the people, I've not found anybody want anything different. I tell you, the one thing I hear the most is that people are tired of all the bickering. They're tired of all the back and forth. They're tired of the Democrat yelling at the Republican and the Republican yelling at the Democrat. One of the things I say to people, if you want to really show the negative campaign that you're against it, vote for us.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't run a negative ad in this race.
Well,
these outside groups are doing it, but I'm not running because I just don't think it's right.
Educate us then, Harold Ford Jr., educate us then about these, what you call the outside ads that are not purchased by your campaign or by your opponent's campaign necessarily.
Well, my opponent actually is running.
He runs some negative ads.
He pays for them himself.
But it says right on the ad which ones he pays for and which ones are paid for by the national committee.
The ones that say paid for by Harold Ford or Bob Corker, the ones we paid for.
Yeah.
The ones that say paid for by the Republican National Committee or the Republican Senate Campaign Committee or the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee. I wouldn't accuse him of this, and I know he wouldn't accuse me, my opponent. He can't have any coordination with them, and I can't coordinate with the Democrat outside groups. It's illegal. It's unlawful.
Why is it that the negative ads are the ones that we remember more so than the positive ads? I mean, you know, I can tell you right off the top of my head, you know, some of the things in the negative ads about your opponent and some of the things in the negative ads about you.
It's the way our brain is constructed about politics these days. I mean, it's unfortunate. But I think a lot of people are rebelling against it. A lot of people don't like it. I mean, I hear it. That's what I hear the most wherever I am. I mean, people urge me, don't go negative. Defend yourself, but don't go negative.
Well, as we prepared for this program, I tried to think, okay, what are the positive ads that I see? And I remember the one with you talking about the protecting the harbors.
Yes.
And so Homeland Security. And I remember the one with your opponent standing, I guess, at the border in Texas talking about immigration and protecting our borders. So let's talk about those two issues specifically.
Sure.
The Homeland Security and the ports, and then immigration specifically from Mexico.
When it comes to Homeland Security, the thing that we need to do right away, I've voted for in the Congress, but it's been voted down, fortunately, by the leadership. The Republican leadership won't. And I hate to talk this way, but these are just this is just the reality. Why I think we need a change in Washington is because these guys have turned back legislation. The 9/11 Commission, you may recall, was appointed about a year after the attacks. Their job was to determine what went wrong and what steps can be taken holistically by government to change these things. There were five Democrats, five Republicans on there. Many of them were former cabinet officials for Ronald Reagan, first President Bush, President Clinton, and a few former senators. Unanimously decided on about 50 recommendations. 41 of them have not been implemented yet. I think all of them need to be implemented. And most of them, some of them deal with our ports, some deal with our borders. With regard to our ports, we inspect less than 5%. The country does. Less than 5% of all the stuff that comes in our ports. I ran an ad because President Bush and his team tried to sell the management contract for our ports to the United Arab Emirates. And I just don't believe you outsource your security. There's a lot of outsourcing going on in this country. I just don't believe that you give the authority to protect our ports, where millions and millions of tons of cargo come in every year, to a country that was home to two of the 9/11 hijackers and home to about half of the money laundering that went on for the financing for the 9/11 hijackers. Just thought it was wrong. When it comes to our borders, and my opponent, when I just hate to say this, but my opponent, when that happened with the ports, it took him 3 days to come up with an answer. I mean, when I learned it, make clear, you can't go forward with this. This country, the United Arab Emirates may be our friend, but you don't give a friend that doesn't have safeguards and controls of its country, over its financial system and its military system, the opportunity to manage our port. Second, when it comes to borders, I saw the same ad you saw with my opponent. I believe that you got to hold employers and illegals accountable. My opponent, he is the only candidate in the country to ever be cited and have his property raided by the Immigration Naturalization Service when he was in the private sector. And when it happened in Memphis on a project he had down there. His answer was that it was a subcontractor that had hired the illegals. The law clearly states that the general contractor is responsible. The only reason I respond to him like this is he's been running an ad calling me weak on immigration.
Yeah.
If you take my opponent at his word that indeed the subcontractor he thought was responsible and not him, if he didn't know the law, it raises two questions. One, how many other illegals are working on his projects if he thought that that was the law? And two, why didn't he fire the subcontractor when he learned that the guy had illegals working for him? I can understand maybe not the first time, but when they came back the second time, why didn't he fire them? They had to come back three times and they raided his property. And my opponent has this position that he is such a good businessman. And I don't, you know, probably is. He made a lot of money, I know. We don't know how much he's made because he won't release his tax returns. He's also the only candidate in the country that refuses to release all of his tax returns. And it ordinarily wouldn't be a big deal, but there have been reports that from 1981 to 1993, he shielded two-thirds of his income from being taxed. Now, he's running for the Senate. In the U.S. Senate, you set federal tax policy. And if you're going to set federal tax policy, people ought to know if you've made a lot. I've released all of mine. I don't make a lot of money. I've put it all out there for anybody to see. And have made
As a congressman, your salary is a matter of public record, too.
Right.
Yeah.
But when you run for office, it's out there. Now, I don't have to release my tax returns, but I do.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're running for public office, understand.
Well, you're held to a higher standard. I mean, that's
people don't want to release their health records. I understand that. But your tax returns, you're voting on federal tax policy.
Yeah.
You can't get around that. And then furthermore, my opponent has spent almost $3 million of his own money in the race. People have a right to know. $3 million is more money than the average Tennessee household will earn in a lifetime of work. That's if they paid no taxes.
Yeah.
All right. In a lifetime of work, that's what they will earn. 67% of households in Tennessee earn about $52,000 a year less. So let's say they worked 60 years. That'd be $3 million, right?
Right.
60 years if they didn't pay any taxes.
And saved all the money and had it.
Didn't spend a dime on their kids, on their home, nothing, which is unrealistic, obviously. So I think the voters deserve to know those things. But on this immigration piece, I think we need a strong border bill. We need to train a border security force in this country. Until that time comes, we need to use National Guard and active duty. Because if you're trying to get into this country as a terrorist or you're trying to sneak explosives, ammunition in, what's the easiest thing to do? You go to the northern or southern border to get it in. Mm-hmm. That has to change. This has nothing to do with one's thoughts about Hispanics or Latinos. This is about the nation's security.
Right.
And when you talk about illegal immigrants, you got to learn the language and people got to get in line.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fair way to do it. You can't jump in front of people by cheating to get here.
Well, obviously, it's a nation of immigrants, of people who, you know, generations, 100 years ago, people came from other countries, learned the language and became
played by the rules.
Part of this. Yeah. Part of America.
Right.
We are talking with Congressman Harold Ford Jr., and we only have a short amount of time. It's been flying by our half hour.
By.
We have about 5 minutes left. So I also want to ask you about the abortion issue, which wasn't a bigger deal for your opponent in the primary, but it came up with regard to you also because you believe in, if I understand correctly, some restrictions.
Well, I do. I believe in many. I got to Congress and I voted 1 or 2 years on the partial birth abortion bill and voted against the bill that would ban it. And I had a conversation, I was about 28 years old, 29 years old, I was elected at 26, I had a conversation with a physician that changed my mind on it.
Really?
And for the last 6-7 years have voted against it. Vote for parental notification. Just, I mean, I admit,
when you say vote against, you mean not vote against the ban, but vote in favor of
a, I now vote in favor of the
of
ban.
A ban on partial birth.
The way these votes
abortion.
Are right. I was never for partial birth abortions, but I understood the argument differently. Now I understand it differently, and I'm against it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm for parental notification. I vote for abstinence programs. I admit I've grown and matured. In Congress. And I think if people don't want someone that's going to listen and grow, then I'm not your guy. And if you want someone that's going to be a rubber stamp for the president, a rubber stamp for one way of thinking, mm-hmm. then you probably don't want me there, because I'm going to be a thinker and I'm going to weigh all the sides and listen to all the issues. And my opponent has attacked me on this, and he flip-flopped on abortion.
That's
and
what the issue was during the Republican primary.
Right. And I respect that. I mean, he evidently hadn't been able to explain it clearly. My reasons are clear. You may not like my reasons, but these are my reasons.
You summed it up, there in about 30 seconds? That's pretty concise. That's pretty good. I had some campaigners come to my house door to door a couple of weekends ago on a Saturday, and they were campaigning for you, and I was very interested
to hear
what they had to say. But the part that struck me as odd is when we got into a dialogue with them, they seemed to be more... for the party, if you will, than for you personally. Okay, they were out campaigning for the party, and their passion, these particular individuals' passion, was more against President Bush and against the war in Iraq than it is you. They said, "Well, I disagree with Howard Ford on several issues, but I'm voting for him because I want to knock the." Their exact quote to me was, "I want to knock out the underpinnings of support from the president." How would you respond to that?
Well, I'm not going to get into people's motivations.
And I know we're talking about one individual, right. but again, that's an impression I got that I said, well, I have to ask you about it because I don't understand that.
Well, we're Americans. People have every right to have beliefs based on politics, their religion.
Mm-hmm. So really, these guys are just they're going to vote Democrat no matter what? Or
I don't know, knocked on the door, but I tell you this. Yeah. Everyone knows how my opponent tries to take this position a little bit too. I'm who I am, and people know that.
Yeah.
I mean, there are those who are going to support me because they like my views, those who are not going to support me because they don't like them. When I get to Washington, the United States Senate, I have a record in the House where I've voted for Democrats when I think they're right, and I vote against them when I think they're wrong. I stand with the president when I believe he's right, and I stand as equally strong against him when I believe he's wrong. If people are looking for someone who's going to be an independent thinker, an independent voice, I'm asking for your vote. And I think people who are supporting me, I thank them. I mean, I think anybody would get out and share their views, knock on a stranger's door, and share his or her views. And your question is just, are they more?
Is a vote for you a vote against President Bush? Is I guess
I don't know. I hope it's a vote for me. I'm not my campaign. We've never run in a way saying I don't like President Bush and you shouldn't like him. We don't have that kind of campaign.
Well, good. That's the answer I was.
Yes, sir.
I needed to hear.
My ads, none of that. We have not been. I mean, I've been criticized by Democrats for being too close to the president, and I'm running for the Senate. I'm not running against. Mm-hmm. I mean, my opponent is attacking me. I got to defend myself against my opponent. But I'm running for the United States Senate. And I want to represent everybody in this state, regardless of your feelings, of views, or where you may live.
Okay, well then, as an elected senator, how will you be able to still stay in touch with all of your constituents?
I'm going to keep coming home and listening to people. You're going to see me back here sitting in this chair a lot, and I hope we have a chance to take some live questions from people some point.
Mm-hmm. Take you up on that. I'll book that.
I want the job not to sit around and pontificate and sit around and judge people and sit around and try to guess what people are thinking. I want the job because I want to be your senator. I want to come and listen and respond to your needs and try my best to represent them in Washington.
Well, one of the articles I read about you said you very easily could have done nothing because you would be, in effect, guaranteed a job for life as representative.
That's what they say about me.
I guess the point of this article was that you had several choices. You could have either been a extreme left-wing spokesperson, or you could have just kept getting reelected every year and didn't handle your constituents, but you chose a third path. Is the point of this article, which may not have been the more difficult path.
It's who I am. I don't wake up saying, all right, is this easy? Is this hard? This harder? I mean, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. And I think my opponent and some of the people who are fascinated with this race, they can't believe that a black guy would have some of the positions that I take. I'm just who I am. I grew up in church, man. I grew up, my family are Democrats, but I just grew up believing that anybody could do anything and grew up believing that people with good ideas, you ought to rally around them. And support them. And that's what I've tried to do in the Congress. and what I would do in the Senate.
Harold Ford Jr., Congressman from Memphis, we appreciate your time on the
God
East Tennessee
you,
Report. Running for Senate against Bob Corker, who will be our guest next Sunday morning at this time. This is the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. We'll talk to you again next Sunday.